This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today I have with me
Janice Muir.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Now, Janice, you've got something to say about changing jobs and career paths, haven't you?
Yes. 22-year-old grandson mentioned to me that he was thinking of changing his job, and I thought, flaming heck, he's had so many in his 5 years. Yeah. Then I stopped and thought about my job, paid employment, over the last at least 65 years. I'm 83, and I started working when I was about 18.
Yeah.
First of all, I went just in the school holidays to the New Plymouth Hospital and worked in the dietitian's kitchen. I thought I was going to be a dietitian until after 6 weeks working in the dietitian's kitchen at the hospital, I realised it was not for me.
Why was that?
I don't enjoy cooking. I don't enjoy planning meals.
Yeah.
And in those days, there wasn't the knowledge about minerals, vitamins and food as there is these days.
Okay.
And all the dietitian seemed to do was to plan the menus for the week for the hospital and cook up sloppy meals for patients who weren't able to digest full meals.
So if you knew that you didn't like those things, but you thought you might like to be a dietitian?
I had never spent any time in the kitchen. My mother was a very, very good cook and never encouraged any of the family in the kitchen with her.
So, have you all paid for that, or you all got motivated?
I can now cook. I can now cook.
Yeah.
From recipe books to start off with.
Yeah.
So that idea went out the boards. In my final year at New Plymouth Girls High School, I realised I couldn't go back to school the next year. My friends were all enrolled, had all applied for university or training college or dental nursing.
This was when?
1958-59.
So it was normal then for girls to be going to university?
Oh, yes, yes. I'm going to digress slightly.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was very lucky in my final year of New Plymouth Girls High School to be in the same year as Dr. Beatrice Tinsley, who is a world-renowned astronomer. She actually died at 41, but she did a lot of research into the cosmic activity.
Oh, yeah.
And so she encouraged me in the science world.
Yeah, okay.
By the end of, as I said, in that year, we had a year of very, very accomplished women. And they, as I said, they were all going to university or training college.
So what was your feeling? I mean, just digressing from this, but there's all the talk about we need women role models in these areas. Women weren't able to do all those sorts of things. And you're talking about in the 1950s.
Yes, 1958. It must have been the school.
Yeah.
Had a very, very progressive headmistress.
Yeah. It was a girls-only school?
Girls-only, New Plymouth Girls High School.
Okay, yeah.
Still has a good reputation.
Yeah. Were you in the top form then?
Yes. I was actually the runner-up to Beatrice. She was the ducks and I was the next one underneath.
Yeah.
At school I did, in my seventh form year, I did English, French, physics, maths and science. So the sciences were there. By September, I realised I can't go back to school next year. I've got to do something. And then,
and you didn't think of university?
No. Part of it was I didn't think I was clever enough because I wasn't as clever as Beatrice.
And but I was, all the others who were lower than you in the school.
Yes. It was just a blinker.
Okay.
It didn't matter.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, the Department of Scientific and Industrial Search, commonly known as the DSIR, sent a notice around to the schools that they knew had good science classes asking for cadets and technicians to apply for jobs at the DSIR.
Yeah.
So I applied and was interviewed and was appointed into the Nuclear Science Institute. A couple of other people from New Plymouth went to, a couple of the boys went down to the DSIR as well.
Okay.
So for the next 5 years, I worked as a technician, carbon-14 dating in the Nuclear Science Institute.
Wow.
Now, carbon-14 dating was very, very new.
Yes.
Dr. Ethel Rafter had developed the laboratory.
Yeah.
And it was the only laboratory in the Southern Hemisphere.
Wow. Yeah.
Carbon-14 is a radioactive isotope of the element carbon. And after about 5,000 something or other years, the amount of radioactivity is only halved.
Oh, the half-life, yeah.
The half-life, yes. Which made it a very good standard to do dating of samples. My job was
to... So was this pioneering globally as well then?
No, it had been in America. Dr. Libby had discovered the radioactive isotope, and they had started it.
Okay.
But ours was a world-renowned laboratory and got samples from all around the place.
Okay.
My job was to extract the carbon from the sample, turn it into carbon dioxide, and then the amount of radioactivity in the carbon dioxide was sent to the carbon dioxide was sent to another laboratory, and the mass spectrometer calculated the amount of carbon-14 in it.
Okay, so you need a load of specialist training for that, or...?
I was trained on the job.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
Trained on the job. I started as a technician and then I finished up as head of the C-14 lab.
Okay.
But wow. We did...
At what, 23? Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I started at 18, and so...
You'd be 23. Okay, I'd have to ask the question, given all the stuff coming through now, did you feel, as a woman in that situation, that disadvantaged you?
No, apart from pay. We didn't have equal pay.
Okay, yeah.
No, I didn't ever feel that, because there were other women in the laboratories.
Okay. Yeah.
There were women throughout the DSIR. We got samples. We did moa bone testing, aging of moa bones. We did aging of penguins from the Antarctic. We didn't need much sample. I didn't need a whole penguin. I just needed a tiny little portion.
Yes. Yeah.
We dated various papers, you know, archaeological papers that had been found.
Oh, yes.
Archaeological things from Peru. It was a very interesting
job. You were able to follow up some of the things where you got dates, you follow up to see what a man should be paid enough to support a family.
No.
No, okay.
No, yeah. that came later. No.
That came later?
Yes.
The family wage?
More, as far as I know. All I know is there was a lot of joking about the men are getting paid more than us.
Oh, okay. Was it significantly more, or...?
Not that I remember,
Okay,
It was the massive amount of about £3 a week.
Yeah.
Okay. That was what it was. And I lived for 5 years in the Woburn hostels, along with a lot of other women, and my board was £1.50 a week. Money went a lot further in those days.
Okay, now, in the hostels, so there were hostels for the women's staff?
There was. The Woburn hostels are still there. They are opposite the Woburn railway station.
Yeah.
But they are no longer hostels. Mm. But there was a hostel for dental nurse students.
Yeah.
There was a hostel for women who worked... in training college, I think it was. There was another hostel for someone else. The hostel I was in, there were two women who were studying to be librarians. Mm. There was myself. There were a lot of women who worked in the Wills tobacco factory.
Mm-hmm.
We had people from all walks of life in the hostel I was in.
Okay. Mm. And was it one where they locked the doors at night? And
after 10 o'clock at night. You had to get special permission to come in later.
Yeah. And what about boyfriends sneaking in and out?
No way.
Absolutely. No? Okay.
It wasn't even thought about in those days.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, it might have been, but not in the hostel I was in.
Okay. Yes. So what was the sort of... If it was quite rigid like that, what's the dating culture?
Mm. you just let them know. No, if you're going out, you let them, let the matron. There was a special matron in each house.
Yeah.
You just let her know, and she made sure she was up to let you in. If you were going to the pictures and said, I'm going to the pictures and I won't be back till 10:30, or I was going out.
Yeah.
More often than not, as you got older, you arranged to stay out for the night if you were going to be out at a ball or something like that.
Yeah. Okay.
So at any rate, in 1964, I resigned from the Nuclear Science Institute. Yeah. A, I was married. B, I was pregnant. Mm. And C, my husband was being had got a job up in Kaikohe.
Yeah.
And so for the next number of years, I followed him from Kaikohe to Rotorua to Tikawiti to Whanganui and finally to Palmerston North.
Yeah,
and
okay.
Of course.
So what was he moving?
He was in milk treatment industry,
okay.
So he was moving to go in promotions all the time up to a manager.
Yeah.
Yes. So that, it was a case of just we moved.
Yeah.
When the
was that two things? Was that normal? Was it very disruptive for family life?
It was disruptive for family life up to a point, but Whanganui we stayed there for 8 or 9 years. And then we came to Palmerston North, and for the for secondary schooling, we were stable.
Stable place, yeah. What about social life then? Was it?
Well,
for
social life, I am very adaptable, and I everywhere we went, I had church liaisons. Husband belonged to JCs,
yeah,
and then he joined other groups. And we did things as families. So social life, it wasn't disruptive.
That's an interesting thing because it's coming across these days that a lot of those sort of social groups, you mentioned JCs and then there's Lions and Rotary and so on, those were things that people joined then, and younger people tend not to join those things now. So you could move around and get into communities very easily.
Right. And I find it very interesting because we have a 59-year-old son who belongs to nothing.
Do you think that's because if you've got both parents working, then they just don't have time for that? Or school, the children's activities are far more organised now?
Yes, I think also we always had the weekends free. There was no weekend shopping. And so the weekends, you were free to... You didn't have the other calls on your time.
Okay.
So then once our youngest child went to school, I then did a stint for about 8 years, just being on call, casual and kitchen jobs.
What? After you said you don't like...
Yes.
And did you enjoy it?
Yes, I did.
Because after several years of cooking for a family,
I didn't do the cooking. In the kitchens, I was the dishwasher, the floor cleaner, the serve, the counter. I wasn't. When I say kitchen work, it was not cooking. Definitely not. It started. The next door neighbour in Whanganui said, "Look, I'm short of one person in the coffee lounge. Could you come in from about 9:30 till 2:30 over the busy time?" I said, yes, that's fine.
Yeah.
Used to cycle everywhere, and I would hop on my bike and be home when the family got home from children got home from school.
Yeah, I can see why that can be good sort of no stress way of getting out a bit and meeting people and bringing in a bit of money.
Yes.
But given that you led a lab on the, did it feel?
No, I'm very adaptable and I'm very pragmatic.
Yeah.
I never thought what I had done and what I should have been doing. No,
You don't feel you've missed out on opportunity. You know, you could have been a
maybe, but no,
but
I don't.
Who cares?
Yes. My final job in the kitchen was at Palmerston North Training College when it was on Centennial Lagoon, on the Centennial Parade there. And that was fascinating. Once again, I was not doing the food. But once again, I was front staff a lot of the time. And we mixed with the lecturers and the students. We did catering for outside organisations. And one of the most interesting ones was for a climatisation, but we had to prepare food from goat, venison, various fishes, and that was quite challenging for the kitchen people. Then that finished because, of course, training college changed. So I went into the job search and saw an advertisement for wanting 6 weeks people working at IRD, just on a short-term contract. Had no great knowledge of IRD. So I went along with six other women, and we sat in...
You went with six... were these jobs for women? Were they, or?
Anybody. It was just on job search.
But it just happened to be a group of women who went.
Women who applied and went along.
Okay.
So for 6 weeks, we sat round long tables, sorting interest tickets into alphabetical order. And I can always sort into alphabetical order very quickly now. At the end of that, the person who was in charge of us very quietly came to me and said, "I would like you to come and work with me in the area that we've been sorting the interest tickets for."
The interest tickets?
Interest tickets, every financial institution had to provide to IRD the interest information of all their clients. Now, this was before resident withholding tax came in.
Yes.
Once resident withholding tax came in, they didn't need the interest tickets because the tax is now deducted at the banks and paid to Inland Revenue. But in those days, it was not.
So the tickets are just saying how much interest had been paid to which individuals.
Stuart Burke's got $150 from BNZ.
Yeah. Has Stuart Burke mentioned it and paid that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that was.
And this was all manually done?
Yes.
Yeah. Create a lot of jobs, I should think.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So I was then. I said, "Oh yes, I'd be quite interested in that." So I did the probationary work. The area I was working in eventually was closed down because, of course, resident withholding tax came in and there wasn't the room for that. So they quietly said to me, "Would I be interested in staying on?" And they put me into what was known as the audit section. Still no accounting knowledge, but I was trained.
Yeah.
And eventually I finished up as team leader of one of the groups in what was known as investigations.
So as a woman, you are working as a team leader in an investigation section. Were all your staff women?
Oh, no.
No?
A lot of them were men.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, it was a good mixture of men and women.
Yeah. Now, I say from my experience in those, you know, going back to the 1970s or whatever, the gender thing didn't matter.
No.
Now it's phenomenally important. Was it an issue for you?
No.
Men didn't mind having a woman supervisor?
No. In fact, some of them are very glad they weren't the boss themselves.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I'm now talking 1980s, 1990s.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, 1990s.
Yes.
2000.
Yeah.
Did
you find any difference in pay then for men and women?
No.
No?
Equal pay had come in by then.
Okay. So was it a big thing? You would have been working when it came in?
Mm.
Was it a big thing with the big adjustments?
No, not really. No. Because in the public service, as you probably know, you were on bands.
Yes.
It was in different areas where equal pay was more noticeable, it was on bands. What was interesting was to, after 20-plus years, though, to look back and see the changes that occurred with working in any government department. When I went there, people could smoke at their desks.
Yes.
And drink coffee at their desks.
Yes.
Then it was banned. You could only smoke at morning tea times.
Yes.
Then smokers were told you can't smoke at your desks.
Yeah.
You know, you have to go into a smoking room.
Okay.
By the time I'd finished, they were banned from a smoking room and outside.
That's
and
right.
Banned completely from around the building and had to go and find somewhere else.
Stand in the rain with a cigarette, yeah.
Yes.
I noticed, incidentally, with the chain, even in hotels, they moved to certain rooms were smoking and others were non-smoking, and then sort of no smoking anyway.
Mm.
And at that stage, I went to a conference and they said my non-smoking room wasn't ready yet, but they could give me a smoking room. Now, from my experience before, you go in a room, there's probably been sometimes smokers there and so on. So I thought, oh, that's fine. I had a smoking room. I didn't think the smoking room would always have had a smoker.
Mm.
And so I just couldn't sleep there. It was appalling.
My husband was a smoker. Mm. He was a smoker till 1987.
Yeah.
And I didn't realise how much it permeated.
Yes.
One of the women at IRD who smoked, she'd open a handbag and you could smell the cigarette smoke.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable.
Mm.
But there were various changes that happened at IRD while I was there. Taxpayers became clients and no longer was it called reception, it was customer service, and various PC things came in.
Yeah.
I retired at 67 from IRD. They were bringing in another lot of computer systems.
This was in Palmerston North, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Another lot of computer systems, and I didn't think I could cope with that.
Yeah.
I couldn't be bothered.
Yeah.
By 67.
So you would have gone through all the early introduction of computers?
Yes. All of that. Yeah.
So what was your experience? Did it seem good? Made things a lot easier?
Did you think
a lot of jobs disappeared, obviously?
No, jobs didn't disappear.
Okay.
Oh, yes, they did. So, yes, because we no longer needed a filing system. We no longer needed so many typists. The jobs did slowly disappear.
Yeah.
And once call centres were introduced... A lot of frontline staff disappeared. Yeah. Offices were closed. Whanganui was closed. Masterton was closed. All throughout New Zealand, offices were closed.
Did this mean the number of jobs went down as well?
It was great. We were sold computers in that there would be no paper. It would be a paperless society.
That didn't work
because the courts, because we used to take... taxpayers, clients, to court.
Yeah.
We had to provide 3 identical files for every court case.
Hmm.
One for our solicitor, one for the other person, and one for the judge.
Yeah.
So, mountains of paper.
Yeah, you can just print out lots, whereas before it was...
So, once that was finished, I'd always had a mad idea to go working in an Apple pack house or fruit of some sort. I had envisioned...
Why?
I don't know. But husband and I did spend 3 seasons in an apple pack house over in Hastings.
Yeah.
And that was an eye-opener. The work wasn't too bad. It was just monotonous.
Yeah,
but the people were good. But the staff, older people, 50-plus, we always turned up every day.
Yeah.
The younger ones... It was the start of the ins and outs of the younger ones as working, I think.
Yeah.
The younger ones would turn up if they felt like it on a Friday after they'd been paid on Thursday and been out socialising Thursday night. Half the time they never turned up.
Yeah.
And so the manager never knew whether he was going to have a full staff on Friday or could operate all the machinery or what.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Mm. So there was a change in leadership. And Gary and I said, no, we won't go back under the new management. And we made the right decision because that orchard was actually prosecuted a couple of years later for falsifying some of their information for sending apples overseas.
Oh, yeah.
So we made the right decision.
Yeah.
As then, after that, I had a couple of years of not working. And I was in my 70s by then, and... I was approached by a friend to see if I'd like to work for Workbridge driving a visually impaired, is the correct word now, partially blind, you could say in those days, a visually impaired person to her appointments.
This is because you signalled that you liked the idea of working for pay rather than just doing voluntary things, or...
I was still doing voluntary things as well, but
yeah.
No, it was just, I loved driving.
Yeah.
and it was the idea of driving somebody, and I was sitting in on her training sessions.
Yeah,
I was able to assist because she couldn't see. She couldn't see what her client was doing, and I'd just be able to say, she's not holding her fingers properly, or she's tapping instead of swiping on the cell phone.
Okay, yeah.
So, you know, it would go out, they'd repeat what had been said to make sure that they were doing their things properly.
Okay, yeah.
So I used to drive this person from appointments in between New Plymouth and Otaki.
Hmm.
And once she returned to Australia, she wasn't replaced. And so now people who are losing their sight don't have the support that they had when she was working here. Which is a bit sad.
But I suppose she had specialist skills that would be quite rare.
Yes, she did. And she's she's returned to Australia, and she now has her own business doing the same thing in Australia and doing very well. But I enjoyed that. Then I thought, well, I love walking. And I like a little bit of extra money, being on National Super only.
Yeah.
I'll deliver.
Now, hang on. You worked for Inland Revenue for, what, 40-odd years?
No. 25.
25 years. And you weren't in a pension scheme?
Yes, I was. But it wasn't the good government scheme.
Ah, yeah.
They changed it. Okay. I got a lump sum payout. The government, the good government pension scheme.
So you didn't use that to get an annuity?
I didn't have enough in it.
Okay.
Didn't have enough in it.
Okay.
Just the way it operated then.
Yeah, fair enough.
So then I walked the streets delivering pamphlets and papers just around our street, and I'd take my little dog walking, and we'd go and deliver the pamphlets and the papers.
And you'd deliver them to everyone who wants them, whereas for most of these things we don't see them.
The firm we worked for closed down, and I couldn't get the area that I was doing, so I said, that's it. So now back to voluntary work again.
Okay, but still very lively, given that you're in your
83.
Excellent.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website. And a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.